The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning.
Good morning. We hope you're well. It's Wednesday, the 1st of April. This is the OTB Brief, the one-stop shop for your sports news every day. Now, UEFA will hold a video conference today with the heads of 55 member associations to outline the next steps for European football to handle the fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. The Republic of Ireland and Slovakia's European Championship playoff is set to be moved to the autumn. UEFA is set to provide an update on the club fixtures calendar and areas such as player contracts and transfer windows. Wimbledon is expected to be cancelled today for the first time since the Second World War in the 1940s. The All England club will meet with the staging of the Grass Court Grand Slam in serious doubt. The ATP and WTA tours are on hold until the beginning of June. Back to football, and collective wage deferrals are up for discussion when the PFA meet with the Premier League and EFL representatives today. The proposal is just one way of all parties looking to tackle the drop in revenues that have come with the pandemic. The former Republic of Ireland internationals Noel and Stephen Hunt joined Joe Malloy on OTB Sports Radio last night. Noel discussed how an equaliser against Italy in a World Cup qualifier in Bari in 2009, credited to Robbie Keane, didn't go his way.
No, it became messy because I obviously came out after the game and the boys were speaking about it. I remember being in the shower and we're going through it after the game, and John O'Shea, we were talking and he was buzzing, and it was just short of light because obviously he's a waterman. I was a waterman. So I came out thinking none of the words of doing the interviews, and I was saying I scored, and then I was told that Robbie came out and said he'd scored. I thought, right, hang on. So I kind of caught me on the hop, you know, that kind of way. And then I was in probably a little bit of shock over the next day, I'd say, of what happened. And that's when Stephen was right. Stephen was came and spoke to me, said, listen, be careful about how you do it, because obviously it could cause friction in the camp. It could be the end of my international career. So I took that on board. I think probably from my point of view, probably a bit too much. I remember I getting a phone call from the FAI on the day after, probably, you know, this is a tough one. But obviously if you go out and start making a ruckus of this, it might jeopardize your international career. I remember losing the head with him, and I thought, what are you doing? I remember just saying, you know, have you ever scored for your country? And he was like, no. So I said, so don't talk to me. You've got no idea what I'm feeling right now. He goes, so how can you dare try explain it to me or try justify what you're trying to say to me? And then that was it. Like, so I thought, right, do I just leave it go with the off chance and say, right, I'll score again for Ireland. I'll get another chance and I'll score. And that's the way I went when I probably shouldn't have. I probably just should have stood my ground and came out and said, no, this is wrong. I was, you know, I felt a bit hard done by. I still did. I was very bitter towards it all up to about probably 3 or 4 years ago. I remember going to see someone. At the time, I had somebody that I spoke to about my football, a football like psychiatrist or psychologist, whatever you want to call it at the time. And I spoke to her about it in great depth because it frustrated me that much that it could happen, and I couldn't let it go. And I was more angry at myself for leaving it go, and letting these people dictate to me what I knew was wrong. But look, it is what it is. By the way, I had nothing against Robbie. I think he's still a hero of mine. I had nothing against him in all this at all. It was just the fact that these people were afraid to go and upset the apple cart because it was him, whereas maybe if it was someone else, they would have gone to probably a goals thing and sort of. I just felt that I wasn't important enough to be dealt with, if that makes sense. And then I got an injury that kept me out for nearly a year, and that kind of killed my international story, which was gutting for me, you know what I mean?
You can check out the full interview with Noel and Stephen on offtheball.com. NFL executives say they're expecting to start their season on schedule and without interruption. Over 3,500 people in the United States have died as a result of the pandemic. But the NFL say they're still planning for international games in the 2020 season, with a schedule drawn up by May. NFL owners have also agreed to expand the playoffs from 12 to 14 teams. Now, the professor of the UCD School of History, Paul Rouse, spoke to OTB Sports Radio last night. He told Joe Malloy about the origins of football in Ireland.
A man called Matt Concannon wrote a poem called Match at Football, which was published in 1720, and it's about a football match that took place on a stretch of ground that people will be well familiar with. It's Oxmantown Green. So if you're driving along the quays from Houston Station towards the city centre, it's just on your left, around the place where the National Museum is now, just on the left-hand side there. That was a huge, long green area which was used for sport in the 1700s. And Matthew Kincannon wrote a poem about a match being played there between the men of Lusk and the men of Swords. And so many of the things that we now associate with football matches are apparent in that game. So, for example, number one, the Lusk men, the swordsmen, despised each other, and that's written in the poem. They really wanted to beat each other. Number two, they're referred to as being experienced players and being able to play because of their practice over the years. So this is not something that they just turn up and it's a random event. It's something that's part of a structure. There is talk about the players being led onto the field by pipers and led around the place, of the crowd around the rope, around it, going wild at every score, about people drinking and grumbling along the sidelines, and of the tackling being ferocious throughout the whole spread of the game.
Wow.
So this tells you that football, and the word football really matters here. I know there's a whole colonization of that word of football, and the word football means a different thing to people in America, to Australia, to England, to Ireland, and even within Ireland. I say football and I mean Gaelic football. You say football, which are football show, and you mean soccer. Mm-hmm. So it's this word football. What did it mean in 1700? And what it meant in 1700 was that there was no single set of rules used even across Ireland for any one game. There are localized agreed rules. It doesn't mean it's anarchic. It doesn't mean that what they played was not something that was played to a structure. It just means it was an agreed structure around the time, and it wasn't. It didn't run writ all across the countryside. So the word football is used to describe folk football all across Ireland and indeed Britain and across Europe. And the idea that there was a Gaelic football, for example, is nonsense.
You can check out Paul's full interview on offtheball.com. Now, OTBAM will start your day on the Go Loud app from 7:30 this morning with Ger Gilroy and Owen Sheehan. We'll be joined by the former Gaelic footballer Mike Quirk and Leinster Rugby Academy strength and conditioning coach Joe McGinley. We'll also have the first edition of OTB Culture Club as Andy Lee talks the movie Rocky 3. Then tonight we'll hear from the Australian rugby legend George Gregan and footballers Stephen Reid and Killian Sheridan. That's your OTB brief for this morning. I'm John Duggan. Please stay safe. We'll be back tomorrow morning from 7 a.m.
The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Tune in 24/7 to OTB Sports Radio on the Go Loud app.